Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here, and today we are going to zero in on native plants and landscaping with native plants. Molly Fifield-Murray directs outreach and education programs for the UW-Madison Arboretum. And when she's on, we've not spent enough time, I think, talking about the Arboretum. It's really a fantastic place.
Hi, Larry. It's good to be here. Yeah. The Arboretum is 1,260 acres right in the middle of Madison, and it's considered one of the highlights of Madison by many people. It was out in the country when it started.
Yeah.
74 years ago. We celebrate our 75th anniversary next year. And it has the first restored prairie in the world, as far as we know. Savannas, wetlands, woodlands. It's quite a gem.
And then lots of flowering trees and shrubs and a world-famous lilac collection, too.
That's right. Yes, there's 35 acres right next to the visitor center. That's a typical arboretum with one of the world's best lilac collections, one of the most outstanding crabapple collections. And this spring, we had a nice long blooming season.
Yeah, it was a nice cool time.
Yeah, we didn't get those 90s in April to make everything happen at once.
How did the weekend rains and all the rains of the past few days affect the arboretum and the roads leading to it?
Well, we had to close the road coming in from the east side of Madison. For people who know, it comes off of Mill Street by St. Mary's Hospital. It actually is sort of a levee for Lake Wingra, and part of it actually acts as a spillway so that the dam doesn't get washed out, and so it was doing its job, but people couldn't drive on it. And I didn't check it this morning, but it might be the same, since I think we had 2.5 inches of rain again last night.
One of the nice things I think about native plants is, the proper native plants in the proper places can handle the kind of terrible wet conditions. I mean, obviously, there are certain things that, Lake Dalton, nothing's going to survive that probably
right.
In its path. But native plants do pretty well in those, can do pretty well in these circumstances.
Well, they can do very well in natural circumstances.
Yeah.
It's when we've artificially added water to marshes and they don't have any way to absorb anymore. For people who are familiar with Madison, there's a little area called Dunn's Marsh out along Seminole Highway, which used to be an actual marsh, but it's pretty much a pond now because we've added so much storm water to it, and it can't even act as a sponge anymore because it's just full all the time.
It's full all the time. Well, let's talk a little bit about native plants or plants native to the Midwest. And there, I'm when Jim was Packard and I were talking a little bit about this, but there, so it seems that not that many people know about prairie smoke or the blue-eyed grass or the bloodroot or the staghorn sumac. Those are cool plants.
Yeah, I don't know why that is that, it's funny. It seems to go in cycles. In the early 1900s, there was a whole movement started by Jens Jensen, which some people may know from his place up at the clearing, to landscape with native plants. And then after World War II in particular, people got away from that and plants got used very architecturally. And people were not so much interested in how they functioned in the landscape, but just they were used like architecture, so you had shrubs that you pruned off and lawns that weren't allowed to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And, you could just have a carpet out there instead of something growing and it would look the same at least. So, and now people are going back to more natural, we're not working so hard to keep a petunia blooming all summer is having something different blooming every couple of weeks all summer.
And it's when you see a well-planned native landscape planting, you can have wonderful blooming all season.
Right. It can start early in April and end in October. Whether it's a prairie garden or a woodland garden, woodland gardens slow down a little bit in the middle of the summer. Not so much blooming, but the berries are starting to come on, and so there's something interesting all the time.
Yeah, I've Bassam Shakashiri, who's on this program very often, and his wife June have a nice home on the lake, Mendota, and they did a very extensive native plantings. You can go there any time of the summer and something new is blooming and it's really quite beautiful.
Yeah, well, at the Arboretum we have as many as 14 species coming into bloom every week. So, if you come every week, you're seeing something different.
Well, listen, if you have some questions for Molly Fifield-Murray as we talk about landscaping with native plants, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. In the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. And you can email us at talk@wpr.org. Chime in. Matt in La Crosse is online, so let's go to Matt. Hi, Matt. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I had a question about some rose bushes. I planted about a dozen ground cover rose bushes, and I'm sure they're not native to this part of the country, but I used to have, they were white, really bushy things, and they would bloom right away in the early spring, little dime-sized white flowers, but then that was it, and then they just looked like bushes. So I got rid of those. I put in some of these ground cover roses, and I'm just wondering if I did the right thing. I put them in the ground, I transplanted them, put them in the ground, I took off all the blooming flowers, and then I put a little bit of blooming fertilizer down. Was that the right kind of fertilizer, and should I keep taking the flowers off for, a few more weeks here?
Mm-hmm. All right.
Well, I'm not familiar with the plant that you're talking about, and if it's not native, I claim to have to not be able to answer this question, but I'll try to help you out a little bit. If you've just planted something, I would not put blooming fertilizer on because you really want it to be producing roots rather than buds. If it needs fertilizer when it's planted, it's usually either a 20-20-20, just a general fertilizer, or one that's actually root-promoting fertilizer. Taking off the buds, if that's not too much work, is fine to let it get established also. Now, there are wild roses that are very nice. They do spread horizontally, but they don't get so tall. Carolina rose gets maybe 3 to 4 feet tall. There are a variety of native roses. They have a single pink flower that's quite large. Maybe you can't see my hand, so it's about that size. Maybe tennis ball size if you cut it in half.
Yeah.
And quite pink. They're blooming right now, very fragrant. If you've ever
very
smelled
fragrant.
An old-fashioned rose perfume, that's what they smell like.
So that might be an alternative for you.
Right.
Thanks very much for calling. Dave in Augusta is up next. Hi, Dave.
Good morning. Being from Madison a long time ago, I was actually a member of the Arboretum crew in the 70s under Catherine Bradley, and it's been a long time since I've been down there. My question is, there was a wonderful tree at the corner of the Curtis Prairie called the Jackson Oak, and I was wondering if that was still standing.
Well, it's still standing, but it's not living. It's probably more than 300 years old, got to the end of its lifespan.
Right.
We've got a lot of offspring right there that we're going to nurture. So there's going to be a Jackson Oak Grove there.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. People of Madison are really lucky to have something like the Arboretum right at their doorstep. It's just a great place.
I couldn't agree with you more, Dave. Thank you very much for calling.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. And let's see. Elaine, I believe, is next in Richmond Township. Hi, Elaine.
Hi. I have immense anthills in my ground cover. And I'm wondering how I can deflate the hills and I can send the ants scurrying, but they get busy and build the hills up again. So how can I get rid of them?
When you say immense, what do you mean? Can you describe that a little
bit
more?
They are big mounds of dirt. You know, I have nothing but ground cover. No, not a blade of grass on my property. And I have all this ground cover.
Are they like the size of a basketball if you cut it in half?
Yeah, like a half a basketball.
Okay.
It mounds up like that and spills over the rocks. And it doesn't look good. It just spoils the whole effect, you know?
And it must be a little bit wet there.
It's wet all over the place. I mean, this is scattered around my whole yard.
Okay. Well, there's two kinds of mound-building ants. There's one that builds its house out of straw, and that doesn't last very long, just like the little piggies. And then there's one that builds its house out of dirt. It's called Formica montana, and it likes wet prairies, and it builds rather large mounds. It's actually a city. There's not just one queen, and it doesn't go away. So the ones in the Arboretum we know are at least 75 years old, and it could be thousands of years old because it's in a remnant prairie. So I personally don't know how to advise getting rid of them. That would be a question for an insect specialist. We think they're pretty neat, actually, in the Arboretum. I can imagine not wanting them near the house, or at least not, you know, as long as the ants stay outside, I don't mind. It's when they come inside, and I had some all over an orchid a week ago, so I had to take steps about that. But outside, I live on a hill with sand, and I have the little sand ants that make just a tiny little mound, and as long as they stay outside, I don't mind. So I guess you'd have to contact Extension or somebody, but it's going to be hard to get rid of them because they're a whole city with multiple queens, and you'd have to really poison them, and I don't know if you want to do that.
Yeah, you could go to, if you go online, to the University of Wisconsin Insect Diagnostic Lab. Just type that in, UW Insect Diagnostic Lab. Go to that website, and there's a place where you, there may even be an answer, you know, of how to actually get rid of them. But the person there is Phil Pelletieri, who handles that, and he's pretty good to respond fairly quickly to questions. So UW Insect Diagnostic Lab, and then you'll see a place where you can send an email with a question. So give that a try and see what happens, Elaine. Thanks for calling. Ken in Milton is up next. Hi, Ken.
Hello. I'm wondering if there's any company available that sells, say, cans of native Wisconsin wildlife
wildflowers.
Seeds.
There are a number of nurseries in the state that are very excellent places to get native plants. I would not recommend any thing that says something like meadow in a can or a generalized wildflower mix. If you look on those, most of those come from huge nurseries out in Oregon and California. And they frequently have things in them that they call wildflowers but aren't native. And in fact, we consider invasive, such as Dame's Rocket or Queen Anne's Lace. It would be better to contact one of the local nurseries, such as Prairie Nursery in Westfield is close. There's one called Oak Ridge Nursery, also in Westfield area. If you just want a few plants, down in Stoughton area, there's the Flower Factory. But you can also go to the DNR's Endangered Resources website, and they have a whole list of the native nurseries in Wisconsin.
Yeah, that's a great place to go. Just go to that DNR website. But you mentioned some very good ones right there.
And I hate to just pick out one, but I was thinking of ones that were close to.
Yeah, Prairie is pretty close. So. Yeah. Good luck, Ken. Thank you for calling. You can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234 or in the Madison area at 263-1890. Talking native plants today with Molly Fifield-Murray of the UW-Madison Arboretum. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking Native Plants with Molly Fifield-Murray. Really pleased to have her on and happy to have you listening in, too. Phil Pelletieri, by the way, will be on next week sometime here. I'll get you the date here in just a minute. But he'll be on, I think, Wednesday of next week, possibly, to talk with us about insects, for those of you who have some worries about ants or whatever. Pat in Galena, Illinois, is up next. So let's go to Pat. Hi, Pat.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
Shall I give my question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I have a shade garden full of wildflowers. It's under a walnut tree. They seem to still do very well. It's on a hillside, moist, rich soil. What I'm looking for is more lady slippers. I just love them. I have two plants that I got a lot of years ago, and they've been moved from various sites, now permanently, I hope. And I'd love some more. You have a source.
Well, lady slippers are very difficult to obtain because they are hard to grow and they don't transplant well. They need special relationship with mycorrhizal things in the soil. And so the one nursery that I know of that was trying some culture of them was Little Blue Stem Farm in the Baraboo area. And they were trying some culture. I don't know that any of the other nurseries were working with the lady slippers or any of the orchids. They're just very difficult to grow.
Plants to the farmer's market in Madison. And I don't know. I've had tremendous luck with my two little lady slippers. They've been moved now three times, and while they're not propagating, they're just very healthy, and they've had nice blooms this year.
Now, are they yellow?
They're yellow, yes.
Those are probably the easiest of them to grow, but I have to say I got some years ago from a man in the Baraboo Hills, and they lasted 20 years, never propagated, and they're not there anymore.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, so, that's not good. That's not good news.
Yeah. So it's just the most important thing is to never dig them in the wild unless you absolutely are sure that a road or something is going in, because they won't survive that kind of transplanting. There's a famous article written by Aldo Leopold when somebody stole the last lady slipper out of the woods in the Arboretum, and he sent a rant to the Wisconsin State Journal and said, well, why don't you just go in the Union and take the pictures off the wall? It's the same thing, because it's, digging some of those wildflowers in the wild is a very dangerous thing. But I would try Little Blue Stem Farm. Like I said, as far as I know, they're the only ones in the area that we're trying to grow them, and they may have them, but they, I don't know how successful they've been.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. So try them out.
Sounds like a beautiful place.
Yeah, it sure does. Thanks, Pat. Robert in Abrams is up next. Let's go to Robert.
Hi. I'm new to Wisconsin and bought a house, new house in about 2 acres or so of very tall red pine, and I'm guessing that they were planted since they're all in rows. But instead of planting grass around the house, we moved the what we could from the beneath the canopy, various red maple, or I'm not saying red maple, I'm not sure what kind of maple they are, and other ferns and so forth. But I had two questions. One is the red pine native, and secondly, is there a way for me to figure out the type of maple these are? They're small,
sure.
And that's basically my question.
Well, one of the red pine is native in parts of Wisconsin, and it's typically growing in sandy soils. Where it's native. It was planted in plantations, which is, it sounds like you have, and we have something like that at the Arboretum also. An easy way to tell whether it's a non-native Norway maple as opposed to a sugar red maple is to break off a leaf and see if it bleeds white sap. When you break the leaf, if white sap is coming out of where you break it from the stem, then that's a Norway maple, not native, and you'll not particularly want to have them there. They aren't banned in the state yet, but they're an aggressive non-native species, and wildflowers have difficulty growing under them.
What color is the sap if it's Norway? White?
White. Milky,
okay.
Yes. And then to tell the difference among the native maples would be to get a good book from the library or from the DNR or from a local bookstore and just look at the leaves and the twigs, and the seeds are often an indicator which species of native maple you might have. There are a lot of native ground cover species that grow in a red pine dry forest on sand that are very interesting plants. I'm not sure. What town are you from again?
Abrams.
And where's that?
That's about 15 or 20 miles north of Green Bay.
Okay. There's some nurseries in the Kettle Moraine area. Kettle Moraine Nursery might have some things. You can also look on the DNR website for nurseries close to you if you're interested in wildflowers under there. One way to make it look like a more natural woods is to take out some of the trees that are in the rows, thin it, because it's probably, pines tend to shade themselves out and you start losing lower branches. And if it's not too far along and you could still rescue some of those lower branches by doing some thinning, that would help it look more natural.
And give that a try. And thanks very much for, I was going to say, on the plants, I lost my train of thought there for just a second. But the UW, if you go to the Extension office, the UW Extension office has master gardeners. They have they may have a horticulturist, or they certainly will have an ag agent who may be able to identify the maples for you too and tell you what you've got now. And you could go from there. So your county Extension office would be a good place to go. All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. Tom and Stoughton's up next. Hi, Tom.
Hi there. Every year this time of year, I take a trip up to near Bayfield, and I always fall in love with the wild lupin growing on the side of the road.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is, does that grow in the southern part of the state near Stoughton, and is it possible to purchase something somewhere?
It grows in sand, and so if you have sand somewhere around Stoughton, you could grow lupin, and that is frequently available from the wildflower nurseries in the state. If you're in clay, unless they have found a population in clay and say so in their nursery catalogs, you probably won't be able to get the sand-loving lupin to survive in the clay.
I see.
There are really old books. There's an old book called by Cheney and True that was about the native plants of Dane County, and they suggest that there was a lot of lupin in Dane County. But there are parts of Dane County that are sandy out in the Driftless area,
yeah,
out near Mount Horeb. In fact, there's some relic lupin stands along an old railroad track out there. But, you know, the parts of the county that are clay probably did not have lupin, and they probably wouldn't fare very well.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Tom. John in Winnicott, Illinois, I believe, is up next. Hi. I'll get you on here in a second. There we go. Hi,
can
John.
You hear me?
Yeah, thanks, John.
Question about lilacs. We live in Winnicott, which is north of Chicago, and in the neighborhood, we've seen what looks like a lilac tree. Now, is that something that is grafted onto a tree trunk, or is actually such a thing as a lilac tree?
There are tree lilacs. They're just coming into bloom in Madison. Mm-hmm. You might be a little bit ahead of us down there. It's a different species, and you can get a few varieties of it. Most of the ones I see around here have white flowers. They look like lilacs. Mm-hmm. The flowers look like lilacs, but the trees are obviously usually single stem actual trees.
Yeah.
They're being used along streets quite a bit in Madison area.
Yeah.
That's where I saw it. Now, are they most nurseries easy to find?
Well, if they're being used along streets, I imagine you can find them at most nurseries.
Yeah. Shouldn't have any trouble with that, John.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yeah,
you're welcome.
Thanks a lot for calling. And we finally have some more open lines. You can join us at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Talking landscaping with native plants today with Molly Fifield Murray of the UW Madison Arboretum. Jill in Madison's up next. Hi, Jill.
Hi. I am looking to replace my grass with a native ground cover that maybe I wouldn't have to mow. And I have a really shady yard, which I think is one reason why the grass is having a little trouble growing. So I didn't know if there was something else that might grow really well and would be low maintenance at the same time.
Oh, that's an excellent question. There are a lot of people with that condition in our mature neighborhoods in Madison, Milwaukee, and places like that. And there are alternatives to lawn that are excellent. I don't talk about ground cover as being an individual thing when we're talking about native plants, but we do talk about the community of wildflowers that would thrive. Now, do you have if you have oaks, you'd be planting one kind of thing, and if you had maples, you'd be planting a different group of things. So which?
The biggest tree is a silver maple.
Okay. So it's fairly shady.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd be looking at things like wild ginger, bloodroot. Many of the spring wildflowers that grow in true maple woods are spring ephemerals, and they disappear in the middle of the year, so that's not what you're looking for
okay. In
your condition, although they're nice to have because they bloom really early in the spring, but then you could plant ferns with them or something that will cover up the dying back leaves of the, say, dogtooth violet, trout lily is another mm-hmm. name for that. Right now, still in bloom at my place are some wild blue phlox, which is a woodland phlox that's nice blue. The wild geraniums are pretty much done blooming. The false Solomon seal is blooming right now, just ending, and then it has a really nice set of red berries. It gets a little bit taller, but the ones I was mentioning previously, like wild ginger, does form a nice clone, so does the clone. By clone, I mean a nice, it spreads by its roots.
Mm-hmm.
So does the blue phlox spread by its roots. Bloodroot spreads by seed, but it can form a fairly dense grouping. In places where you have little splashes of sunlight, you could have columbine or Jacob's ladder. Jacob's ladder is a plant that can grow in the woods or in wet, sunnier areas. And those are all very low-growing plants that have persistent leaves.
Oh, great.
All right.
Okay, thanks very much.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. And let's go to Marilyn in Washburn now. Hi, Marilyn.
Hi, good morning. I have a question about lupin.
Yeah.
Okay.
It is overtaking my property. And in reference to the fellow who called, I have really hard clay soil.
Oh, really?
And and I keep offering to give anybody with a shovel.
Well, if he wants to drive up there.
Whatever they can carry off. But I'm wondering if there's a safe way to discourage them, because they're choking off the other wildflowers. And pretty soon I'm going to have just lupin.
And you're sure that it's lupin?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, so it's blue spike. It's a blue spike.
Right, it starts out pale,
uh-huh.
Changes color to pink to purple.
I don't think of lupin as being pink, except for the Russell hybrids.
Well, they change color, and I am a member of the Master Gardener Club up here.
Okay.
And there's no question, but they're lupin, unless it's a certain kind we have up here.
Well, there are also hybrid lupins, the Russell hybrid lupins, and some of those are pink.
They don't stay pink.
Okay.
They just change. You know, they start very pale.
Okay.
And then from pink to purple.
Okay.
Oh, I understand now. I didn't describe that properly.
No, that's okay.
But they do end up purple.
Well, it's very interesting that they're on clay, and there might be some nurseries that would be interested in obtaining some of the seeds of them. As to how to get rid of them, I think the thing to do would be to cut off the flower head so the seeds are not popping.
Okay, right. I've been doing that.
Lupins spread, I think they spread primarily by sort of propelling their seeds out. You actually have to wear safety glasses if you're collecting the seed sometimes, because the pod pops open and sort of propels the seed a short way.
Sure.
I don't know how much it spreads by root system. I just don't know the answer to that.
I don't either, and I keep I keep looking for more information, but there, so far I think it's just the seed
there
that
is,
I have found.
There is a nursery that's just gotten started up in your area, run by Becky Brown in Washburn, and she might be interested in learning about your clay tolerant lupin.
She might want to come out and harvest some for you.
If you could just see them, you wouldn't believe it.
And she might also have some advice on getting rid of them, and I imagine that she's available in the phone book.
Well, would you tell me her name again?
Becky Brown.
Becky Brown, and is that, well, maybe she would be listed that way, but...
She may, and she's right in Washburn, and she does have a nursery started. So if you can't find her in the phone book, maybe just by asking around.
Sure. I'm surprised I haven't heard of it already.
Yeah. You could try at the Sigurd Olsen Institute. They might know how to contact her.
Okay, great.
Thanks.
Well, thank you.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. She might be more than happy to take over that stand of lupin. Mike in Spring Green's up next. Hi, Mike.
Hello there. If I might add a note on the lupin topic and on the tree lilac topic.
Okay.
That lupin sounds like a very old horticultural variety, which does grow well in clay, and which can be a bit aggressive.
Okay. Is it part of the Russell group?
It's actually from the 19th century. It's a rather old horticultural hybrid. And regarding our native lupin, you can find them throughout Iowa County and Dane County, in what you might think is a clay soil, but it's on the xeric side of the valleys, below sandstone bluffs.
Yes.
So what you have is 8 to 10 inches of sandy duff that they're growing in.
Yes.
At least the crown is growing in. They have rather deep roots, and the deep roots must be in the clay.
Yeah.
Or. They might be spreading out on top of the sandstone. That's where I've seen them naturally near Riley in Dane County, and they're below a sandstone bluff. But if they got down more than 2.5 or 3 feet, they're hitting solid rock, so they might just spread out horizontally then.
Mm-hmm. And on the tree lilac, the most common varieties, as you know, are the... what are called the Japanese tree lilac and the Chinese tree lilac, which are very nice tree specimens and bloom at different times. But the French hybrids, especially those of Lemoine, can be trained into a single trunk tree form very well.
Oh, okay.
And they have also that interesting, highly textured bark when they get older.
Yes.
I'm thinking of an example. I saw an Algoma that had a 6-inch diameter trunk, and
wow,
was doing extremely well outside of a cafe up there.
Oh, we don't. I wasn't familiar with that because we actually do renewal pruning on the lilacs at the arboretum, so we don't have any of them trained into a tree.
Hmm. Interesting. Thanks a lot, Mike.
Yeah.
Sure.
Appreciate the call. And you can join in at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. Adrian in Cable is up next. Hi, Adrian.
Hi. Just want to clarify, follow up on the last two calls, that the lupin that occurs in northern Bayfield County is not the native variety. It's the Eurasian variety. And the woman is right who was calling earlier that it is becoming a invasive species. So the earlier caller who was trying to find seed of that and plant it in his heavy clay soils, we'd rather discourage them from doing that because it can become rather an invasive species.
Okay.
And especially in the northern lakeshore area, it's becoming rather invasive right now.
Okay.
Okay, thanks for that. I knew that there were Russell hybrids, and I knew that they spread, but I didn't know they had become a problem up there.
Yeah, as you drive up toward Bayfield from Washburn, especially this time of year or a little bit later, it'll be just thick along the roadways.
Yeah. All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, okay. Adrian. Appreciate it. Josh and Phillips is up next. Hi, Josh.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Good. I'm calling today about, I'm planting a yard. It's just dirt right now, but I don't want to plant just grass. I want to plant native flowers and et cetera, low growing that can take some traffic and mowing.
Well, there's a couple of different ways to do that. There's some of the nurseries sell a low-grow, no-mow lawn mix, which is not actually a native lawn. But there are people experimenting with native lawns, and they use things, not only wildflowers, but grasses and sedges. So you might have a sedge called Juncus tenuus, which is a path rush, which actually likes trampling and grows primarily in paths, only gets about 3 to 4 inches tall. It's a nice little plant. We have it in almost all of the paths of, at the Arboretum. By accident. We didn't plant it that way. We are going to be putting in a blooming lawn at the Arboretum and part of our demonstration gardens for homeowners that will have that plant as well as blue-eyed grass and yellow star grass, which are not grasses. One of them's in the iris family, the other's in the amaryllis family, but you would not have to mow it at all.
Okay.
They probably could tolerate some trampling, but I wouldn't turn,
four dogs out there.
The four dogs or the daycare center out there. if it's a really sunny situation, there are lots of prairie grasses. There are lots of prairie low-growing species that you can use. There's okay. whole lists that you can get from a variety of places.
Where would I go to get a list?
Well, many of the nurseries have their catalogs online
okay.
now, and so the two that are online that I'm most familiar with, and I apologize to every other nursery in the state for not mentioning them, but Prairie Moon Nursery in Winona, Minnesota has a wonderful online catalog, as does Prairie Nursery in Westfield, Wisconsin. There are other ways to learn about the native plants and actually see them and sort of pick out your favorites. Visit a natural area near you. Go to some classes. We have a native gardening conference coming up, not until September, but it's all day on September 14th. But it's down in Madison. So if that's not convenient for you, contact some Wild Ones. And that's a very specific group, not just those crazy people in your neighborhood, but there's a group called the Wild Ones, and their website is 4_wild.org, and they have groups around the state that are very active, and they invite people to their yards to show them how to. They share a lot of information and can also share techniques and also contractors and things like that that they've worked with.
Nice.
I wouldn't be surprised if you didn't have some Wild Ones right in Phillips.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, you're talking to one right now.
Yeah, great.
Thanks a lot for calling. And we should mention again this conference. It's a how-to conference for gardeners.
Right.
September 14th. It's called Native by Design 2008, and people can sign up now for it if they want, can they?
I think so. I'm not sure if it's up on our website yet. They can certainly, they will soon be able to sign up on the website, or they can call for a brochure and sign up by paper the old-fashioned way.
Okay. All right, Josh, thanks again. Brock and Dale, it is your turn. Hi, Brock.
Hi, how's it going today?
Good.
I have a little comment on the wild lupin. My mother has bought in strains from Mosquito Hill Nature Center and Stein's Gardens and Gifts. She's a master gardener. She planted it, and it's being a little bit aggressive, but for the most part, we enjoy it. So I'm just kind of saying that just make sure where you're getting your seeds from.
That's right.
Yeah.
And the other question I have is about marsh marigolds. I love the plant profusely. I love it, seeing it in the spring, and I just wanted to kind of learn a little bit more about it.
Well, you know, the other name for it is cowslip, and it likes, naturally, it likes sort of open areas that are occasionally disturbed, although once it's established, it's in... I have some property out in the country, and it's it continues to bloom in a sedge meadow, which is a fairly wet community that can also dry out. That's one nice thing about marsh marigolds. They can also grow in a fair amount of shade. I've seen them along a stream in a beach. Well, it's not wasn't a forest anymore, but a river area in Racine. they bloom quite early. They're that nice bright yellow that you're familiar with. I think they're available through some of the nurseries. And I've seen the plants at our native plant sale at the Arboretum, which we have always the Saturday before Mother's Day. Now, I'm not familiar with native plant sales around in other parts of the state, but once again, that would be a way wild ones would be another thing. They often do seed exchanges and know how to propagate the plants that they have.
All right. I'm a natural resources student at Fox Lake Technical College, so
okay.
I've worked at Mosquito Hill a couple of years, so I kind of know where to get them. I just wanted to get some more information from the Marsh Miracles because I don't see very many people advertising them.
Yeah.
Well, not very many people have that much wetness in their home gardens.
I'm part of the Rat River Basin. That's where property is, so we get a lot of
Water.
Kind of plant.
Right.
Okay.
Now, they are starting to be used in places like rain gardens, and we haven't talked about rain gardens, but, you know, when we were talking when we started out about the stormwater problems we're having right now in the state, one of the things that people can do that would really help the environment is to make sure that their gutters are not going onto their driveways and just dumping water into the storm system, but to try to get that water to infiltrate on their property. And one way to do that is to establish a rain garden, which is usually a grouping of native plants that's designed to drain within 24 hours so people don't have to worry about mosquitoes with them. And fortunately, there are very many native plants that can survive being that wet and then that dry. And so those are something that homeowners can do that would help replenish our water supply and help keep some of the stormwater out of the rivers.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, yes. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Jim in Reedville, we'll get to you in just a second, but want to remind everybody our topic today, landscaping with native plants. Molly Fifield Murray of the UW-Madison Arboretum, our guest today here on Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. We'll take your calls if you have some questions about native plants. Molly Fifield Murray with us today, and Jim in Reedsville is up next with a question. Hi, Jim.
Hi. The question I have is I have a septic mound system installed this spring, and due to the rains, I would like to plant prairie plants, flowers and grass on top of that mound system, if that's possible.
Yes.
And I was wondering what would be the best time of year to do it, what process I would use to do it. I already have about a 2-acre native prairie that I planted in '96. It's doing quite well. And so what would be the best way of going about that?
It's a good place to establish something like that, isn't it, Molly?
Yes. In fact, there's an extension bulletin, or there used to be if it's still in print, on putting prairies on mound systems that describes the process and the recommended plants. So you could get that through extension. If you can't get that through extension, once again, I would just take your favorite plants from the prairie that's nearby. Now, as far as planting time, it's such a strange year, I'm not sure what to say, because it's been too wet to get in. Well, you know, I was lucky to get my plants from the Arboretum plant sale planted right away, or they'd still be sitting in their pots. Usually we say, you know, I'm sure all the nurseries plant most of the summer, and if you're planting with plants, you can plant anytime. But if you're planting with seeds, sometimes it's best to stop about the middle or end of June and wait until late fall so that the seeds have time to germinate, grow into plants, and then become winter hardy. So if you wait until late fall, they're not going to germinate this year, but they'll germinate in the spring. So if you could get something in right away, either scattered seed or put in plants, that would be great. If you can't get it in before, say, 4th of July, you know, I really would recommend waiting until fall.
You can buy from nurseries packs of seeds that have the grasses in it and that have the flowers in it. Is that a good mix? Would that be a good mix? You can buy them from Prairie Frontier and the Prairie Moon, I think you mentioned.
Yes.
And those would be good mixed for that?
Yes. In fact, many of the nurseries have mixes specifically for your situation.
For septic systems.
Yes.
Okay. Would you work the seed in fall or just lay it on the top?
Well, I would... what do you have on the now? Is the soil bare?
It's bare. It's the topsoil. Part of it was put on, and we started getting the rains, so they had to stop putting the topsoil on top of it because of the wet conditions. So when they can finish it, I don't know, when the rain stops, I guess.
Right. Well, one thing is, if they're bringing in topsoil, which I frequently don't recommend if you're planting a prairie, but if they're bringing in topsoil, I would wait anyway to see what kind of weeds are in there and germinate.
Mm-hmm.
And I would probably plant some sort of annual ground cover just to hold the soil.
Okay.
Whether it's annual rye or oats, preferably. Uh-huh. Something that's really short. Or you could try Canada Wild Rye, which is a native annual that could take that situation. But you'd be able to see if that topsoil they're bringing in is full of weeds.
Okay.
I've had topsoil brought in. It frequently is full of quackgrass or other weeds that you don't want to maintain, and you need to see what germinates out of that.
So you should say it should wait maybe until next spring?
Well, if you're watching it and, you know, nothing's coming up to speak of that you're worried about, if it's just a velvet leaf or something that's an annual, cut it off before it sets seed, sort of stimulate the seed process, and then you could plant. Some people even plant on top of snow in early spring so that the seed sinks down with the snow. If you're worried about weeds, wait until the snow's off, see what germinates, take care of that one more time, and then plant.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. And Barb in Chile, Wisconsin, your turn. Hi, Barb.
Hi there. Love the program. Thank you very much. We'll be buying some property hopefully this summer, but it's clay. But I'll be looking into, you know, some of the native plants that we can try and put in corners or something. But I have three questions. One is to talk about that Canadian lilac. I know that I thought we had ordered a tree lilac tree, and I thought it was Canadian.
A tree lilac?
Yeah.
No, it's Japanese or Chinese.
Okay. I just, for some reason, thought that. We had it for about 5 years before it bloomed. Last year it had 14 blooms on it, and the swallowtails loved it.
Oh, okay.
Now, after the blooms were there, I pruned it, and now this year there doesn't seem to be as many blooms. Did I prune it incorrectly? Should I leave those, you know, flowers on?
For tree lilacs, I think you don't need to do the renewal kind of pruning that you do for the shrub lilacs.
Okay. And then you mentioned the Queen Anne's lace being invasive. We also have that invasive taking over every flower garden we first started. But we have a plant, Queen of the Prairie.
Yes.
And is that natural to Wisconsin or native to Wisconsin? Or
yes, it's a native prairie plant.
Okay, and how do you get it to stop?
Well, do you have the grasses growing with it?
No, it's just it swallowed up the Queen Anne's lace even.
Oh. Well, Queen of the Prairie likes wet prairies, and one mistake that many native gardeners make when they're just starting out is to not plant the grasses with the wildflowers. The grasses are very important to keep the wildflowers under control. You know, an old gardening term is that sometimes things get rank, which means getting too tall, falling over, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And lots of wildflowers will do that if the grasses aren't planted with them. And people think that the grasses... When I say that, people have that in their mind that the grasses are holding up the plants above ground, but what they're really doing is competing with the wildflowers underground in the root area so that the wildflowers can't get so tall.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, New England aster, if you don't have it surrounded by grasses, it will get very tall, fall over, and... be six feet tall or so. But if you have it surrounded by the grasses, it may be 4 feet tall, but it's going to have a hardier stem and stand up better.
Great. I can't wait to get involved in this more. One more quick question. Do your peonies, are they blooming down there?
Yes.
Ours have been in buds for like 4 weeks, and they will not open. I'm sure the weather has something to do with it. But
maybe you don't have the right kind of ants. To
I saw ants. We'll get that other lady's ants.
Yeah, right.
No, I don't want those. Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Barb, for calling. Appreciate it. And Mark in Twin Lakes, your turn. Hi, Mark.
Hi. I've got two separate issues. I'll try to be quick. My front yard, I have twin maple trees. They're just gorgeous, and they're not going anywhere. But they also create bald spots in my front yard. I wouldn't mind having a low-cover wildflower-type deal in my front yard if there was something that would grow in pretty much total shade.
Well, the first question is going to be, are they Norway maples? Because sometimes it's hard to get anything to grow under them at all. And we go back to whether it has white sap when you break off the leaf. But I would try things like I mentioned to the other person, like the wild ginger.
Wild ginger.
Some ferns even. Things that can grow throughout the year in that deep shade. If you don't mind something that gets sort of tall, something like mayapple. The blue wood phlox, these are all things that stay green all summer in deep shade, but they have a hard time under a Norway maple.
Okay, I don't know if they're Norway or not. Now, the wild ginger, can you actually cook with it?
It's a different plant, yeah.
But it is low cover?
Yes.
Okay.
It's maybe 3 inches tall.
Okay.
And we're going to have to take a quick break to take a look at the news and weather and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. On this edition of Garden Talk, we're visiting about landscaping with native plants. Molly Fifield-Murray, our guest today, Larry Mueller here. Molly directs outreach and education programs for the UW-Madison Arboretum. It's always fun to have her along, and we're having a great time talking with her today. We have questions, I know, about wild asters, about river birch. Well, that's not quite a native. Well, we maybe answer that one. Someone wondering about resources for certain types of native grasses. What about you? You may have a question as well. We hope you'll join in with that question at 1-800-642-1234. Or in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. And, of course, you can also email us, and the email address is talk@wpr.org. And we'll be back with Molly right after this look at the news. Stay with us. Talking about landscaping with native plants on this edition of Garden Talk, Larry Mueller here with Molly Fifield-Murray, who directs outreach and education programs for the UW-Madison Arboretum. And give us a call with your questions, 800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. We'd love to hear from you. And Pat and Maze Amaney's on board. So let's go to Pat. Hi, Pat.
Hello. Thank you. I'm in the third year of a prairie planted with seed provided by the Department of Agriculture, and I plan to burn next spring for the first time. But this year I want to try to eradicate the first worst offenders with the glove of death. And I read that pigweed is allelopathic to other plants, so I know I want to get rid of that. But are there others that are just the worst kinds of vagrants for prairies? And then I also wondered if you could suggest a resource on identifying grasses that are prairie grasses and sedges that are invasive.
Well, I'll start with the last first. I think last week Larry had on Dr. Andrew Hipp, who's just written a book, The Sedges of the Midwest, which is a wonderful new book on sedges for the area. Now, if you're talking about non-native sedges that are pests, there are usually very informative extension publications on weeds for farmers that are also useful for people who are planting prairies. So you can get a sheet front and back has maybe a dozen or more species on it that shows you how to identify it and how it's like nut sedge or something that's a problem in farm fields.
Okay.
The biggest problems in most prairie plantings are either very heavy infestations of annual weeds or biennial weeds like Queen Anne's lace, or perennial problems such as quackgrass. Sometimes you can get some of the farm weeds that come in later, like the fall panicum and some of them that are not the native panic grass but are a weed that is common in farm fields, particularly if you're coming in after it's been in farming. You frequently have some of those weeds. So with your glove of death, I assume you're soaking a glove in a glyphosate herbicide and just rubbing it on the plant.
Right.
And the other thing that I'd watch out for is wild parsnip, which is a threat to you as well as your planting because of its toxicity in sunlight. You can get some really horrible blisters from it. And it's a biennial, so you can get rid of it by mowing, or you can, well, actually, there's even a special tool sold called the Parsnip Predator, but it's just a narrow spade-like tool that helps you dig right under the crown of the root if you don't have too many of them. But that's one of the weeds that spread along our roadsides. Yeah. There are some new invasive plants on, and I know Larry has Kelly Kearns on frequently.
Yeah.
Some new invasive plants. There's Japanese hedge parsley is newly invading savannas. It looks like a parsley family plant, and it has very cut leaves, but it's good to get some of the identifiers. In fact, the Bureau now has some plants of potentially invasive species to watch out for, and actually they ask people to help notify them if you see a new weed that pops up. So that might not be exactly what your question was, but I think most prairies at 3 years old, you could mow instead of just individually swiping the plants. But if you just have a few, you could use that technique too.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Thank you.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Molly Fifield-Murray, our guest as we talk native plants today. We're staying away from the chives and rhubarb and things like that today and trying to zero in mostly on the native plants with her. So keep that in mind as you call. And Jennifer in Milwaukee, you are up next. Hi, Jen.
Hi. I was able to acquire some wild aster, some of the tall varieties that get a good 6 feet or so.
Wild aster?
Yeah, and they have beautiful, beautiful purple flowers.
Yes.
But my neighbors say those are weeds, and last year actually cut them down without my permission. How do you educate people? What are the laws about bringing in something that, and I admit this is a big plant. What are my rights?
Hmm.
Well, that's an excellent question, and that's an excellent reason to join the Wild Ones, because that's something that they work on very hard to modify weed laws in cities. Some cities still have fairly archaic weed laws where you have to cut things down. Now, a 6 foot tall aster, if it was in your perennial garden, would be acceptable, but if it's in your native plant garden, sometimes it's not. And sometimes the difference between a native plant garden and a perennial garden doesn't have to be that different. So one of the questions is the New England aster, which is what I'm assuming this does it look like it's supposed to be there? Does it look like a garden? And if it doesn't look like a garden, you might want to make some effort on the edge of it, or some way to make it look kempt. And I know that Lori Otto's probably screaming around her house right now for having me say that. But if you're having neighbor problems, other than going to counseling together, I think the best thing is to honor in some way your neighbor's sensitivities. And I frequently suggest to people that they mow an edge between themselves and the neighbor and then start their native garden and make sure that it looks like it's planned to be a garden instead of something you just let go wild.
Yeah, those are all good tips.
But excellent idea.
How to convince them? I mean, you can talk about biodiversity. You can point out how many butterflies come to it. There are 6 species of butterflies that overwinter as adults that need that late nectar that just about only that aster only supplies. So, you know, that's a whole new way of thinking about the landscape, is that the landscape has to be sustainable, and it has to serve a function for it to be sustainable. And if we can start to think of our landscapes as, think of ourselves as part of the landscape, think of ourselves as part of the earth, and have the willingness to make our landscapes be functional instead of architectural, then we'll end up in better shape.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it very much. Kimmy Kimi in Madison is up next. Hi. Just a second here. Let me try that again. Hello.
Hello. Do you hear me?
Yes. Yes. Thanks for calling.
Okay. I had a question about a new building site. If you have some open land that has not yet been seeded and you want to set some aside for maybe a small prairie patch, but you're not ready to plant the prairie yet, is there any kind of cover crop that you can put on that area that would be easy to till in and, you know, better than planting it with, seeding it with lawn?
Yes, there are lots of things to use. I mean, one thing you could use is the native annual Canada wild rye. Also, you can use oats or annual rye. Now, there's some concern about whether those have some toxicity to them once they're, well, after the, you know, some allelopathic, which is a chemical that they put out. But I think many of the native nurseries have recommendations for pre-planting like that, and you could check with them also.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Great. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling.
I would just follow up a little bit in that if they're talking about bringing in topsoil, I wouldn't necessarily recommend it for the area that's going to become prairie, because prairies don't need that. They'll make their own topsoil, and bringing in topsoil often brings in a lot of weeds.
Yep. It sure does. Thank you for calling. Patricia in Madison, you're next. Hi, Patricia.
Hi there. I have a shooting star plant, and it comes up fine in the spring, but for the last 2 years, it hasn't bloomed. And I was wondering if there's something that I can do to make it bloom.
Now, did it used to bloom?
Yes, it did.
Okay. Has it gotten shadier there?
Well, it's planted about 2 feet away from a birch tree, but it comes up, you know, before the tree is fully foliated. And there has been some Virginia bluebells that have been kind of flopping over that area, which may be shaded too.
Right. Well, it may not bloom every year. If it's starting to get too much shade, it may have to gather energy for a number of years before it can put up another flower.
So it likes much more sunshine then, is what you're saying.
Well, it can be an oak savanna species. It just won't bloom annually in more shade. And when it's in the prairie, it's more apt to bloom. When it's in the open, it's more apt to bloom annually.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Anne in Cross Plains. On to you now. Hi, Anne.
Hello, Larry and Molly. Thanks so much for the wonderful program.
Sure.
I have a question, well, lots of questions, but we have 35 acres of old farmland. It is along Lake Michigan in the Sheboygan County area, and we've just kind of gotten started on trying to do some, you know, restoration from the farming that had really not been done for quite a number of years now. We are getting some help with some cost share on some invasives. I'm wondering, when you're trying to control invasives, do you want to put in something else in its place right away, or just kind of wait and see if some of the other native things that maybe were kind of squelched down or pushed out might come back in? Because I kind of hate to have a lot of open land, because disturbed land seems to bring in invasives maybe easier than some of our native plants. So that was one question. And then the other one was resources on land like this that is along the shoreline, which has then northern and southern species, you know, native species in Wisconsin, you know, that could maybe be helpful in trying to do a restoration of this sort of a step at a time.
Okay. Well, let's start with the last one first before I forget it. And so the thing I would do is go to the Colorandre Dune State Park, which isn't too far from you.
Right. I'm familiar with it.
See, look at the vegetation there, talk to the people there, see what sort of friends group they have, whether they're doing restoration there or not, and volunteer for them perhaps and learn from them or see if they have some classes.
Okay.
Go for some of the walks to see the plants that would work in your same situation. Now back to the invasives. It depends on what they are, but and it also depends on how the area has been farmed.
Yeah, the area actually where they're, well, we have the invasive that we're trying to really get a handle on this summer is Japanese barberry, and it is actually in the woods. And this land is sort of half, it was half old field and half woods, basically. And so in the woods, the barberry, I'm not sure what, you know, that would be. If we should try to plant or let, there are, you know, natives there, but there's also garlic mustard and in the field we have quite a bit of autumn olive.
Well, was the woods grazed?
Most of it was not, because a lot of it is wet. It's ash. Some of it is the white ash and maybe green. Some of it was just kind of low and kind of going towards a little wet area. So I don't think...
You don't think they...
Oh, whether it was grazed. I believe in one area it was, because there was a... there was some digging done that made sort of a pond. It would be called, I guess, an ephemeral pond now. And I think that maybe was because some cattle were...
Right. Well, sometimes grazed woods won't come back because there's no seed source, but you say there are some natives nearby.
Oh, yes.
So I would get out the Japanese barberry and the garlic mustard and be diligent about the garlic mustard. And it might not be, as long as there's seed sources, it might not be necessary for you to supplement the planting. Although I think, depending on how big your patches of garlic mustard are, it might be good to plant something like a woodland grass or something there so you can tell the difference, and just so you're taking up the space. Mm-hmm. In the old field area, I think it's helpful to plant where you're killing things if you're sure that you're killing them. So if you're not killing them and you need to wait and see, then it's sort of a waste to plant there, unless you're planting an annual that you're just going to till under. Mm-hmm. What you really need is sort of an overall plan, a good list of the weeds you're trying to deal with, whether they're annuals or perennials, how invasive they are, and how much money or time you can spend each year, and also what's the biggest threat, and sort of go after that. In a methodical way, starting with a plan for it and say, okay, we've got to take care of the garlic mustard. We got to cut off the Japanese barberry. We're not going to worry about the Timothy and stuff in the old field. So, you know, that's the way to get started, I think.
Okay, great.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thanks very much for calling. Someone phoned in about Mariette Nowak's book, Birdscaping in the Midwest, Native Plants to Attract Birds. Are you familiar with that book?
Yes, it's a very nice book. We have it in the bookstore at the Arboretum, and she actually was here earlier and did a book signing and a talk that was very nice. It's a book that you can find at the Arboretum bookstore and other bookstores around the state. Mm-hmm. And by the way, if people are living near Madison, they can come and see some of our native plant gardens on Wednesday evening, this coming Wednesday evening. There's a walk in the garden that begins at 7 p.m. and goes until dark. And then there's another one on June 25th, another one on July 30th, and then one in August. And those are all leading up to the Native Gardening Conference in September. So if people live within driving distance of Madison, they can see some nice samples of native gardens that are planned like they would be planned at a home. Now, mm-hmm. the nature centers like Schlitzer Ware in Milwaukee and some of these other parks have nice examples of restorations, but they are not necessarily planted like gardens, although most of those have garden-like areas right around the buildings.
Mm-hmm. All right. Joe in Wisconsin Rapids is up next. Hi, Joe.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Quick question. I want to know a source for native tamaracks. Got a wetter area on the property I'd like to bring some tamaracks into, and I can't find any place that will carry them.
Well, I don't know up in your area. There are a couple of wonderful woody plant nurseries in Milwaukee area. Leeds and Johnson's Nursery both carry native plants. And Johnson's, in fact, has come out with a nice color booklet on native plants in Wisconsin. But in your area, there's Evergreen Nursery up by Green Bay and some others that might have tamaracks, but I'm just not sure. Have you tried that one?
I have not. I'll give it a shot.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Dave in Madison's up next. Hi, Dave. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you very much. Great show.
Thank you.
I had a question that's somewhat appropriate to our current weather situation. I've got a rain garden.
Yes.
And I was wondering what would be your top three or five plants, native plants, for a rain garden that has a part sun situation.
And what kind of soil?
It would be clay soil. I'm on the east side of Madison.
Okay. My top three. Wow, that's hard because I usually recommend planting about 30 species. Well, okay, let me start with my favorite.
It's not a big rain garden.
My favorite grass for a rain garden is prairie drop seed.
Okay.
And that's Sprobolus heterolepis. It can be partially shade tolerant. Otherwise, you're probably going to end up with some of the sedges. But prairie drop seed is low growing. It can tolerate wet or dry conditions. And it's a beautiful grass for an urban landscape. It doesn't get tall, very decorative grass. I think you can see it in the medians going out to the airport, if I remember correctly. So if you want to see what it looks like. I also like, for the fall, I like Riddell's Goldenrod, which is a very nice goldenrod, attracts a lot of pollinators to it. By the way, goldenrods don't cause hay fever. They just happen to bloom when ragweed does. It's a very showy plant. And, of course, we've been talking about New England aster, which is very tall, but is a nice one. For the spring, I like the golden Alexanders, another yellow flower. There's two of them. There's heart-leaved and there's a regular golden Alexander. Either one of them can be in partial shade. The golden Alexander can tolerate more shade.
Okay.
So that's three. Does that count?
Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Sure.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Sarah Stein wrote a book that's still timely, I think, called Noah's Garden. And that sort of details the adventures of a homeowner who wants to bring nature into her yard. Do you recommend that book?
Yes, it's a very nice book. And she wrote a follow-up book to it also. Planting Noah's Garden, I believe, is the title of that. And she actually talks about some of the Wisconsin gardens in the second one. It's a very nice description of a homeowner realizing what they can do to live better relationships with the biotic community around them. They started out with a very conventional suburban area and converted it. She's recently deceased. It's sad to see her go, but she wrote some excellent guidelines and sort of both philosophical and practical.
And the other thing I wanted to mention again is you've got your Native by Design, a how-to conference for gardeners. It's not coming up until September, but, there's no time like the present to get,
yep.
You make your plans. We're always planning 3-4 months ahead, at least, at our home anyway.
Right. And And then if people, like I said, if people are nearby, they can come and walk in our native plant gardens with Susan Carpenter, who can answer any question they might come up with about native gardening. So that's another opportunity.
Yeah, and those are Wednesday nights.
Wednesday night at 7, not every Wednesday, but there is one this coming Wednesday, the 18th, and then June 25th, July 30th, August 20th.
Always a pleasure, Molly. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Yeah, been good to be here. Thanks.
Molly Fifield-Murray directs outreach and education programs for the UW-Madison Arboretum. We'll have her back again, of course, and we'll talk more with her about native plants. Just to let you know, coming up Monday, Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody join us to take a look at sports injuries and kind of recovering from them. Thank you for listening. Happy Father's Day to all the dads out there. And stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network.